This is Stephen Adams.
And this is Kevin Durant. Oh, sorry.
Kevin Durant. You're Kevin Durant, mate. Good to see you, mate. Different complexion.
Okay, let's go again.
So, this is Stephen Adams.
And this is Enes Kanter.
You're listening to the Down to Earth.
Down to Dunk podcast.
What? Down to Dunk.
Down to Dunk.
I'll
down
say
to
that.
Dunk. Introduce yourself, mate.
Here's Stephen Adams, and I'm Enes Kanter. And you're listening to Down to Dunk podcast. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht. We are part of DailyThunder.com, also Almighty Baller Radio. You can listen to us on Dash Radio. On Saturday afternoons, the draft is this week, and Thursday we are having our own draft party. It's downtown in downtown Oklahoma City. It will be at Anthem Brewing. We will have free Chicken Express there. We'll also have free giveaways from Oklahoma Shirt Company. We're also having our NBA Draft Challenge. So you need to go to our Twitter page or our Facebook page, click on our Draft Challenge. I put another post out there today on Twitter. Click on it. You can look at all the rules there, but you fill out your own mock draft. You send it to me by Wednesday of this week, and then you have a chance to win $100 to Chicken Express. I think a $25 gift card. I haven't got that completely nailed down yet, but I think a $25 gift card to Anchor Down, and then free gear from Oklahoma Shirt Company if you have the best mock draft. So fill those out. Come hang out with us. It'll be a super fun time. But until then, here's where we can get some more information. I have Michele Barra on the show today to talk about the NBA draft. Michele, how's it going?
It's been great. It's a very interesting time of the year now.
It really is. The most interesting thing that's happened in the draft is that the Boston Celtics have traded the first pick to the Sixers. And if you've been living under a rock all weekend, and this is the first time you're hearing this, I would be very surprised. What did you think about that deal? I'm still trying to process, but what did you think about the deal?
First, I was confused, but then when I saw like the picks that Philadelphia basically traded, which are, if I understood it correctly, the Lakers pick if it falls between 2-5 next year, or the Sacramento picks with no protection according to some sources, or with the protection to the number one according to other sources. So if the latter is true, I don't like this deal at all for Boston, because you don't want to have like both in both picks the protection for the number one. But if it's just the Lakers one, I think Philadelphia still win this, but I can see the like the grand scheme that Boston has, which is to me like having three assets instead of two, and still having two very high level picks to trade or to develop in the coming years. So I mean, if the front office of Boston has the idea that Markelle Fultz is not in another tier with respect to, for example, Tatum or Josh Jackson, then, or maybe even Lonzo Ball, because it's not entirely clear what the Lakers are going to do with their pick, then I think it makes sense, because you get an asset for free.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case, sure. I'm a little dubious to that. I think Fultz is the guy in this draft. And I'm kind of shocked that they did that. And maybe they don't think he's going to be a superstar. But if Markelle Fultz is a superstar, like if he turns out to be James Harden, and I think Tatum and Josh Jackson have a lot of flaws in both their games, I'd rather have Josh Jackson, because I'm not a huge fan of Tatum's game. But I'm surprised, because, I mean, the Sixers, if this works out, like they've got several superstars on their team now. And for the Celtics, if they don't trade those picks for players, like if they don't trade for Paul George or Jimmy Butler, or there's rumors about Anthony Davis potentially, like if they don't get one of those guys and they don't get like a future number one pick, like, I feel like if they're not using their assets to turn them over into stars, then I don't understand the move at all. I don't understand it, because I feel like whenever you acquire those picks, and if you are going to keep them, you're just hoping that you can get the number one pick so that you can get a transcendent superstar. And clearly they don't think that Fultz is that, but I don't know that I agree. Do you agree with that? Do you think Fultz is a star?
I think I'm roll with the thought that Sam had, like, in a few pods, Sam Vecenie had in a few pods, which is, I get why Fultz is number one. I don't see him having the greatest upside, or an upside that is different from any other prospect. I really think that a guard with that size and with that shooting efficiency, although that, like, the free throw percentage is not entirely great, but those instinct with that mobility, he will succeed in the NBA. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can see glances of being a superstar from both Tatum and Jackson, I think, and Lonzo in a perfect setting could be like really a Jason Kidd with a shot, even if I'm not so high on his shot. But I mean, I kind of growing in like a sense of trust in what Danny Ainge is doing, because his draft record is not bad at all. I mean, he hardly missed on prospect in the last few years. He picked like Jaylen Brown higher than it was like the consensus position, and he was actually the best pick available there. So I mean, if he saw something or like either an interview process that we don't have access to, or some stuff like this, then maybe you say, well, okay, I like all these three prospects the same, and I really want to have another asset because I want to turn it into something else. Part maybe because having like a top pick in next year draft, like two top pick in next year draft, is more convenient to him. Like up to now, it's very hard to judge a trade like this. I think that in 2 years, we can either say that like Danny Ainge did the best move available there and he's a genius because no one else would have done it, or he just overreached and like overthought the full idea, and getting Fultz was the best.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Is that there's no way to evaluate this trade today. Like there's absolutely no way, because we have seen literally none of the guys play that are going to come from this trade. But it's fun to talk about. It makes this draft very interesting, and it changes the draft dramatically, which is kind of funny, just 1 and 3 swapping, but it changes the draft dramatically. I'd like to thank Chicken Express for sponsoring today's show. Right now, this month, you can walk into Chicken Express. You can get 16 dark, 6 biscuits or rolls for $20. That is a really great special. You should take advantage of it. Make sure that you get a side with it. You can get mac and cheese. You can get mashed potatoes and gravy. You can get French fries, fried okra. You can get those jalapeno poppers that I talked about that are just so good. Lots of great choices. Wash it all down with a sweet tea. And be sure to come to our show if you've never had Chicken Express, or if you have, I know that you probably want more. You should come to our live draft party, because we're going to have free Chicken Express there for you, along with free tea, everything you could want. It's going to be there. Come check us out at the draft party and go to Chicken Express today for lunch or dinner. One thing that we've seen over the course of the last couple of weeks, not necessarily from this trade, but a dramatic change, is a guy that we both liked through this whole draft process, OG Anunoby. In certain draft mock drafts, like Draft Express currently has him going to the Thunder at 21. You look at like Chad Ford's mock draft, he's going 13 to the Nuggets. I mean, he's all over the place. Like, he could be as low as the Thunder, he could be as high as the lottery. And it's hard to know. And I feel like a lot of people have soured on him. But what are your thoughts on Anunoby? Let's talk about him versus Ojale, because I think Ojale is a guy that people have kind of fallen in love with. I did a little a Twitter poll about who the Thunder should take. I didn't include OG in this Twitter poll because at the time I didn't think that he would fall, but people chose Ojale over Juwan Evans and Derek White, and even Justin Jackson I included in the poll, and people slightly preferred Ojale overall. But what do you think about those two, and let's start with who would you rather have, and then tell me why.
Well, I mean, I kind of think I know who Ojale can be at the next level. he's a fine prospect to have, like a gifted offensive player. I'm sure he will have a role. He like showed himself at the combine in a perfect shape, saying the right stuff in the interviews. Everyone I heard like praised this guy. But when I saw like the numbers and what he can do on the court, for the Thunder, I really don't like him. In general, I may see him like being drafted around the position that the Thunder are at, like for example from Portland, or even if Atlanta has some prospect that is very similar, but maybe the Nets, maybe even the Raptors. So I don't say he is outside of this range. But for OKC, like having Jeremy Grant and a prospect like Ojeleye, for me, it doesn't make any sense because he is already 23, so you have to play him right away. Mm-hmm. And in the modern NBA, he can play four. I'm not sure he can guard threes because, I mean, he didn't show that at college level. And with big guards, with quick forwards, I think he will have issues. Which is the same thing that Jeremy has. Don't get me wrong. I mean, even Jeremy is not like a three. And offensively, yes, he can knock down shots. Maybe he will be a better shooter than what Jeremy is right now. But can he do like anything else? Like, for example, passing the ball, being part of a fluid offense, or he's just another target for us? Because if we want to construct a team that is just targets for Russ passes, I think this team cannot move forward. And what I like best about Anunoby is that he's younger. He has a better physical profile because it's long. He has like a good spam. He's a little bit taller. He has like already defensive instincts that Ojeleye doesn't have. And he's like 2-3 years younger. And he saw flashes. I saw flashes about his shot, about his post moves, about his general like understanding of basketball. Like, if you remember how different, like, for example, Joel Embiid was from day one in college and the end of the season, like, Anunoby seems like a player that has little knowledge about basketball, or at least he is not like a consumed player like played a lot in like organized system and blah blah blah. So I think he has a lot more to show than what Ojeleye has. He's also a transfer, so why he didn't succeed and Duke can succeed in a different kind of offense is also a question mark. So I like Anunoby because I don't think his jumper is that broken. I don't think we saw enough about him to be scared. Of course, the thing that scared me the most is knee issue, which is like kept secret by his agent, rightfully so. And if teams has like intel that we don't have, then I know I can understand why he is lighting, but other than that, I would draft him like first among this group of players for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Thunder are in a place where it would be really nice to bring in a guy, and I'm high on guys like Ojeleye and Derek White and guys like that at 21 because I think the Thunder need role players. But if you have the chance to draft an OG Anunoby at 21, where you don't have to give anything up, because any situation that I thought the Thunder would get him, they would have to give something up. But you don't have to give anything up in this scenario, and you just get him. Like, I don't see why not. Because the Thunder, yes, for sure, they need guys that can play. But they also, there's no way that they can get this kind of upside at 21 and a player that can be a wing in a league that is starved for good wings and a guy that can play really 3 through 5. He can't play like a full-time five, but you could do small ball lineups where he's the five.
He played much better on the post right now compared to his perimeter defense. So, I mean, I saw him guarding bigger player, and he's really, really, really good in the post. So, I mean, I can see him really guarding three roles from 3 to 5, not from day one, but I mean, the idea of a prospect is that can do that for sure.
Yeah, and you know, you can imagine a lineup where he's your center, and then you have Jeremy Grant and Andre at the three, and then you play Oladipo and Russ, and then you're talking about one of the most athletic lineups in the league, that the defense is ridiculous. And if OG can figure out how to hit a corner three, then you're talking about like a crazy fun lineup that can play with anybody and can play defense with anybody. And there's offensive questions with that for sure, for sure. But if Andre is basically your five on offense, then, and if Jeremy's shooting is real, and if OG can figure out how to shoot the three, then you're talking about a really potent lineup. And then you can even put Adams in there and slide OG to the four. I mean, he provides a ton of versatility. He's still very young. He's still developing. I don't think that you can pass that up. I don't think he's going to be Kawhi Leonard. There's people that are super high on him. Jonathan Charks is very, very high on Anunoby. And Charks is actually going to come on our show on Friday.
Oh, wow.
And so we're going to be able to process who the Thunder get on Friday. I don't know if I'm going to release that on Friday or Monday yet, but he's going to come on and we're going to kind of process who the Thunder got. But he has him, I think, like fourth on his big board. I mean, there are people that are really high on him. And because of his limited offensive game at the moment, I think that there's some people that are just way too low on him. I get that you think that he's Andre Robertson. I get that. But you see more flashes from him versus Andre. What do you think about that comp, the Andre Robertson comp?
I mean, he's bigger. Like, I don't think he can guard twos like Andre does. But for example, if you see the clips of his shot at the college level compared to what Andre is shooting now, like how Andre is shooting now, I mean, Andre's shot is really, really complicated to be kind. His back is like the way he put his leg inside the shot is wrong. The way he uses his arm is completely wrong. His shot is called Powerball for a reason. I mean, everything about that shot is wrong. At the college level, he was shooting like 30-31, which is the same percentage that Anunoby has. And he didn't like change that motion entirely when he went to the NBA. With Anunoby, I think you get a player that has a little bit better shooting form and has flashes about other kind of offense, like, for example, some spin move on the post, some drives. I mean, he can drive. I mean, Andre, under year one, couldn't drive. Like he couldn't put the ball on the ground. So, I mean, I think his athletic level and his offensive level is slightly higher than what Andre had. And it's more translatable to an NBA level, according to my opinion. I think saying that he's the same player offensively that Andre was in college is, I would say no. I mean, he has better instinct, better form. And as you said, he showed flashes of being like somewhat a good offensive player.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I don't think that he's far from being a good offensive player in the NBA, but he's not Andre Robertson far. Like I don't think that Andre is ever going to be a productive offensive player in the league. I don't think the same thing about OG. I think that OG can be a guy that can be a 3-and-D 4. And I think that he can play some three. He can even play some five, like we talked about. And I also think that he has potential to attack closeouts too, which really just takes him to another level. And he finishes strong at the rim.
Yeah.
Like he does not shy away from contact. The Thunder, for some reason, everybody besides Russell Westbrook isn't great at finishing at the rim. But that's not OG. He goes strong and he finishes very, very well around the rim on his drives. So if he can get there, even as a slasher, he can be a rim runner. He is not Andre Robertson. Like, he's just not. And I hope that I hope that people hear this and that they can take that comp out of their heads. I mean, Robertson is his absolute floor to me. if he just falls apart mentally, if his knee's so bad that he doesn't have the athleticism, and if he mentally is in a really bad place once he gets to the NBA, yes, then he could be Andre Robertson. But we're talking about like worst case scenario. I think best case, you're talking about a 3-and-D wing that can defend probably in a few years all five positions, and a guy that can be really special and has a lot of upside. When you look at a guy like Ogilvy, he's a guy, to me, he's a straight four. I don't think that he can play the three. He can shoot the ball. I think his best attribute is his shooting. And his defense, I'm not totally convinced that he can be the switchy guy that people want him to be. I think he can do that maybe a little bit. I don't think he does that at an elite level. And he's a guy that's only like 6 months younger than Steven Adams. I mean, he's got to play now. And if he can't play now, then what? I mean, it's a wasted draft pick. But I like him. I would not be upset if the Thunder took him. But I think you're right about like the Jeremy Grant duplication that they're basically the same guy. They show flashes of maybe being able to play the three, but to me, they're both straight fours. They're 3-and-D fours that are more role players and don't really have a ton of upside, because I don't think either of them have the skill or the ability to become, you know, anything more than what they are.
And like, to be a little bit nice to Andre, drafting an Andre Robertson type player at 21 is not bad, because he was the second best player in last playoff series, which is not what you want. But I mean, that is to say that Anunoby, I think, would be very, very good at 21. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not sure he will drop that much, because in the end, in draft room, when you see like all the good wings going in the early spots, then you draft him, because you know how the NBA is going. I'm not sure that, for example, Denver will draft a John Collins type of guy, or like Portland spending like picks on like two or three picks on centers. I mean, I really don't see that. Yeah. And so if you can get it at 21, it is worth the gamble. I mean, even if it goes bad as Perry Jones, mm-hmm. I mean, there was a reason to draft him. And if it mm-hmm. doesn't pan out, then fine. It was like a good gamble. And you can select a player that if he can play up to what you saw, like up to the flashes that you saw, it is worth that pick and more. If it doesn't for like physical reason, well, okay, this is the gamble that you have to take, I think. Mm-hmm. If you want like to reach a bit, if you don't want to reach, then there are other prospects that you can take that can slide in. And I mean, but not, I would not choose him, Ogilvy, over him if they are both available, for sure.
I don't know, like I don't see like the three picks before OG being TJ Leaf, Justin Patton, and Bam Adebayo. Like I just I would be just floored if those three guys go before him. Like I would just be absolutely floored. And I'm high on OG. I'll admit that I am high on him. I think that he can come in and he can be a real difference maker in this league, and I think he'll have a long NBA career. But I'd be floored if they chose him. So let's say that OG is not an option, which I think is the most likely scenario. I'm still really high on Derek White. He's 23 too. Like he's the same age as Steven Adams as well. But he, to me, fills a position of need, and that I think he can play backup point and he can spot up next to Russ, and he, you know, is a decent defender, and I feel like he's a pretty good passer. I just feel like he can do everything. I don't think he's going to be great at anything, but I think that he can do everything and come in and be a role player and play immediately. What do you think about taking Derek White at 21? Most people that I've asked think that it's a reach, but what do you think about taking him at 21?
I think that he should be our pick. I mean, I'm totally sold on him. I saw like all his clips basically from college in the last few days, and I really think he could be the best fit for the Thunder and one of the best players you can get there. Mm-hmm. I think he will not be the guy, like the point guard with the most upside there, because Joan Evans has more upside than him in this league. Yep. But if you want to maximize the player, and if you are OKC, then you really have, I know that I already said that many times, but you really have to pick a player that can play with Russell Westbrook. And I didn't saw like any other player, maybe Kennard or Justin Jackson are like two names that can very well be players that can complement Westbrook in some sense. But I think Derek White is one of the best player to put alongside Westbrook, and he has the ability to run a second unit. I saw a clip, and like many clips, when he actually screened for his point guard, like back screen and all this stuff. I mean, I really like players that get involved in the action, even if they don't have the ball. And Derek White does that. Like there are many clips when you see him like screening for a teammate, then run through another screen and like shoot from like catch and shoot offering. And I mean, these kind of stuff are the thing that OKC misses from his guard position. And I think he would be perfect to do this kind of stuff with Russ. And also he's capable of running a pick and roll very effectively. And so, I mean, it is really the best prospect that I saw that I would pair with Russell Westbrook available at that position. And I mean, he's even a good shot blocker. I mean, he has like crazy instinct to be an help defender. So yes, he's old. That is a thing that we cannot change about him, because I mean, he's a late bloomer. But like Damian Lillard was like old when he got drafted. Mm-hmm. And he was a late bloomer as well. He was a hell of a shooter. Derek White, he's a hell of a shooter. I mean, he has like 40%+ from three, very good in spot up situation, very good from a dribble, very good going to the rim. I mean, yes, you don't get upside. You basically get what you see. But what I saw about him really made me think that he could be the best pick available at 21.
Yeah, he's my guy. He's been my guy for a few weeks. But if you just even read his raw stats, like they're just like they're very good. In 32 minutes a game, he was 18 points. He shot 57% from two. He was 40.1% from three on four attempts a game. He shot 80% from the free throw line. Four rebounds, four assists, a steal, and a block on 2.5 turnovers a game. Like that, like he can do it all. And like I said, I don't think he's going to be like this elite prospect. I don't think that they're drafting like LeBron here. They're drafting a guy that can come in and be a role player and he's going to be able to plug a lot of holes for the Thunder, because the Thunder clearly have a need at backup point guard position. They're playing a guy that when you looked at DRPM on ESPN.com, he was 75th out of 91 point guards. When you look at offensive RPM, he was 89th out of 91 point guards. Like the Thunder needs somebody so bad. And Derek White can come in and he can do it. And he can also, he's tall enough, he's big enough. I think he's
6'5". Yeah, 6'5", 6'7", wingspan.
Yeah, he can play next to Russell Westbrook. And that's the thing that you and I have both really been on. And I think everybody agrees that they need somebody that can come in and give more than just 13 minutes a game to this Thunder squad. And Derek White's that guy. Like he can play the two. He can play the one. He can play next to Russ. Like you said, he's a smart player. He knows how to screen. He knows where to go. He can defend. He's, to me, that's the guy. Unless OG is there, I would take OG, because I just think that this team at 21, you can't beat that upside. Like you just can't. But if you're talking about a guy that can come in day one and affect the rotation, then I think it's Derek White. I don't know that the Thunder will pick a 23-year-old to bring in to play immediately. But if the Thunder, if their inclination is that Russell Westbrook is going to stay, then Derek White's the guy. That's just flat out to me.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to hear some shooting splits, he's shooting 70% in restricted area, like 70. For 35% of his volume. So he knows that he's a good shot for him. He's shooting 47% on top of the key threes, a little bit less on the corner, because like college corner is not that efficient. And then a good 40% mid-range, which sounds bad, but if you saw like other prospect percentage, I'm telling you, this is above like the median of these top 60 guy in college. And I mean, I think he really showed a lot in this year at Colorado. And if you heard like a lot of pod like recently that the Lions is history with basketball, you can see why we are so high, even if it's old. He's old in terms of like date of birth, but he's not old in terms of basketball.
Yeah. And I think if you were to point out like a big concern is that he jumped from Division II ball to Division I ball and then to the NBA in 3 years. And you could be like, I don't know how that's a very unlikely story. Like that story, you don't see that story. You see like a guy that jumps from Division I to Division II or Division II to Division I and then is able to play out their career and then maybe they go to Europe. Like that's the most likely scenario for those type of guys. But he absolutely destroyed the Pac-12 this year. Like he was very, mm-hmm. very good. And I just think that he's going to come in, and if it's for the Thunder or for whoever, he's going to come in and he's going to make an impact on the league, and he's going to be a guy that I think will make the all-rookie team and is a guy that is going to have an immediate impact. And if you're the Thunder and you're at 21, and I don't see a lot of guys that have tremendous upside at 21, like we talked about Ojalayak, I don't think that he has tremendous upside unless you're going for a big. If you like, mm-hmm. Anabogu yeah. has a lot of upside. Pacheknik has some upside. Like there are guys.
Giles has upside.
Yeah. Harry Giles, Terrence Ferguson. Those kind of guys definitely have upside. But to me, those guys are big, big risks. And the Thunder also, if they plan to, unless they plan to overhaul what they've got, which I do think they need to do, but if they don't do that, then there's no reason to take a big man. And also Terrence Ferguson scares the crap out of me. I know he's a local kid. He was, you know, born and raised in Tulsa. But I'm not a fan of him. DJ Wilson's another guy. I saw him on a mock draft going to the Thunder. Like I don't know what you think about DJ Wilson. I don't think we've even talked about him, but I would not draft him if I were the Thunder. I would stay away. What do you think about DJ Wilson?
Like I'm not that high on him. I mean, I can see him being like a very polished player, but I mean, he plays a position where the Thunder wants to do other things. Mm-hmm. And I don't see the upside that makes me say, okay, like I will take him. Yeah. So I mean, I would say he can be like as DJ Leaf probably. They will be nice player in the NBA if they can pull it together on defense. But they are not the prospect I would search for if I am OKC. Justin Patton is a different animal. I heard that they brought him for a workout, mm-hmm. and I can see why. Probably because they want to saw with their eyes how crazy he is, because mm-hmm. it is rumored that he's not like completely, it's not the easiest prospect to deal with, but I don't know any specific, but he has a ton of upside. Like yeah. he can be like a do it all big, and I can see a lot of upside, but again, not the best thing to do if you're the Thunder, unless you really saw something that we didn't, and you cannot miss on that prospect, and you plan to move part of your front court in the offseason, which can be like a possibility.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We're going to answer some Twitter questions. I asked for questions last night, and so we are going to go kind of fire through some of these. We won't get to all of them, but thank you to everybody who gave us a question. This is from @BenVance. Will uncertainty about Russ's return affect how OKC views this draft? What do you think?
I think you have to keep it on the back of your mind. But on the other hand, you don't want to... like, most likely, a pick at 21, if Russ is gone, will not change the course of your... next seasons. Mm-hmm. So Yes, the only prospect that would make me think twice is Javon Evans, because what we said before, he's a local, he can be a very good like backup point guard from the beginning. So he, if like for some reason you have it high on your board, then for sure having a sort of insurance for us if our sleeves, it's nice. But I don't want to say that will be my pick. I mean, if you can get a guy that blends well with Russ and gives you things for the coming years, then you roll with that. Because Russ is like watching these as well. So mm-hmm. if you say, well, I get the best point guard because I'm afraid that Russ leaves, I don't think this is how Presti operates. And so, I mean, I don't think that Thunder will operate in that sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Thunder aren't going to operate from a place of fear, and they never really have. And so I think you're right, and you're right in the sense that Russ isn't sitting back and saying, like, well, they took Juwan Evans instead of Derek White, I'm out of here. You know, like, you're right, this pick is, in probably in Russ's head, isn't that big of a deal. Like, he would probably rather see the guys around him develop or have them bring in some kind of mid-level free agent to help out. I don't know that he has lofty expectations when it comes to this pick, but the Thunder are always interested in making their team better. Like, that's always what they want to do. And so I don't think that it changes that. I don't think it changes that approach all that much. If they felt like they got the best player at that spot, I think that's what they'll do anyways, is that they'll try to find the best player at that spot. So I don't know that it affects this draft all that much. And I don't know that Presti thinks like we do. I can actually probably tell you Presti doesn't think like we do on some of this stuff. So I don't think that it impacts the way that the Thunder pick. I think that it would probably impact the way that I would pick, but I'm not sure that it does with Sam Presti. Next question from @sis66. He asks, hypothetically, who would the Thunder pick if they had the fourth pick? So Fultz, Ball, and Josh Jackson are gone in his scenario.
If this scenario implies that Russ is still here, I would not go with De'Aaron Fox for sure. Mm-hmm. I would be... I like Tatum. I know that you don't, but I really like Tatum. And I don't think he will be the fourth pick. I think he will be gone. But let's say he's there, I'm taking him. And the other prospect that I would try to see if I can get, I would really need to see more of him is Jonathan Isaac, because he actually intrigues me a lot. So these two players... at number four, probably I would go with Tatum, and because I think he can be like your secondary creator from the wing, which is a position of need for the Thunder. I think he's better than what we saw at Duke, because he's a very hard worker. He had like a difficult season because he was injured at the beginning, so he basically skipped a lot of the training at the beginning of the season, which is very important to get your feet set for the season. And so, I mean, I think he will show up in a different, completely different condition next year, whoever is drafting him. So I really think that he has the most upside besides Markel Fultz, and so I will roll with him.
I'd take Jonathan Isaac. I love his versatility. I think you can play the 3 and the 4. He can shoot from deep. He's got shown some passing ability. I'm a fan, and I think he's a good player in a system with Russell Westbrook, because he is a low usage player, and I think that he is 3 and D, and he can play the 3, 4, and 5. And he's 6'11" with a 7'1" wingspan. Like, he's a big dude. I'm a big fan of him. I'm a big fan of his game. I think that he fits the modern NBA very, very well. And like everything that I talked about with OG, him being, I think that Isaac, I don't know that Isaac will be as good of a defender as OG is, but he's already got the offensive game that like I'm projecting onto OG. And so that would be my guy. And I get the Jason Tatum, like I think he can score. I just worry that he's going to be a Tobias Harris, Rudy Gay type player. That would be my concern, in which I just don't like those guys are good and they belong in the NBA, but I just don't know how valuable they are compared to a guy that can switch everything and that can shoot threes and that can move the ball.
Yeah, that make completely sense. I mean, I understand why. What I'm afraid of, speaking about Jonathan Isaac, is his unproven ability to create for others and to create for himself. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I get the upside on the defensive end. I get the upside on him, like a very tall player that can switch. He can really switch because he has very good feet. And I get your concern about Tatum. He can be a Rudy Gay type player, yes. But I think his three, he likes to shoot the three. And he already has like a good percentage, I think 37, 38. And so if you can get a Rudy Gay that shoots from three, I think he's still a good player.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Caleb Martin, 43, asks, would you be willing to trade Cantor for a Brooklyn first? Or do you see that as selling way too low?
I think it's not selling low. And if they can absorb the salary for the 22nd pick, mm-hmm. I think that if it's your only move, no. If it's part of a bigger plan, yes. So to be a little bit more precise on this, if your only move is to trade Kenner in order to be to have a better salary cap and don't add immediately another player like either a guard or whatever, then I think this would be a move that Russ doesn't like at all. Like and it's the kind of move that I think Presti learned not to do, because I mean yes, at 22 you can get a guy, but Enes Kanter is a very good player, and so and it actually helped a lot throughout the regular season. And you need those kind of players. You need a good scoring player from the bench, and you don't have it if you trade away Kanter as a salary dump. So if you can get another player, then yes, sure. Even if you can get like a Jeremy Lin type of player, sure, I will do that. For the 22nd, no, I would not do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think inevitably there'll be some kind of step back whenever they trade Kanter, at least in the regular season, like you said, because he is so helpful from game to game in the regular season, because he can exploit mismatches and you can for sure get buckets when you throw the ball to him in the post. And especially when he was passing, whenever he was willing to pass, like that was, he was a very, very good player. We only saw flashes of that throughout the season, but yeah, I mean, you're trading him for the 22nd pick and you'll draft who? Like, who's going to come in and be the game changer? Maybe OG drops to 21 and then you get Derek White at 22. Like, I would like that, but that doesn't make this team better. And I think you're right. That's something that Russ would look at and be like, we did what? We traded Enes Kanter, a guy that I know that I can throw the ball to and that we can get buckets and we can run a pick and roll. Nobody can stop us. And I think that trading Kanter is going to be maybe the toughest job that Presti has over the next year or 2 years, if he's even able to do it. Because I don't know what value you get back for him. I don't know how you get good value for him unless some team's willing to give up a wing, and I don't see that happening. And if he does end up shooting threes, then he's better off staying with the Thunder. Like, the Thunder are better off having him. And you could play those two center lineups with him and Adams more. And you can play him more in the second unit. And he can space the floor. I mean, if that's a real thing, and it's not just like posturing from Sam Presti, then I think that he has more value to the Thunder than he does trading him. Especially for a pick in the 20s. Because a pick in the 20s, I mean, it's a crapshoot. you just don't know. Mm-hmm. I talk about a lot of these guys, like I know that they're going to be great and I know they can play. I just don't, I just think that you, a lot of times you have to stick with what you know is a for sure thing. And Kanter is a for sure elite scoring big man. And to trade him for like TJ Leaf or Anabogu or Pacheknix or something, it's just like, ugh, like you just rather keep Kanter. Let's see. Next question comes from Johnny for USC. Should OKC focus on players according to Russ's timeline or according to the team's timeline, as in get older, more experienced players or get younger players? So he says, in other words, should they get older guys like Thornwell, Derek White, Ojale, or younger guys like Ananobi or Ferguson? I'll answer what I think and I'll let you go. I don't think it's that simple. I don't think it's as simple as you draft either an older guy or a younger guy. I think that it just depends on who's there. And I think if Ananobi's there, I've already said my piece on that, then I think you got to take him. I don't think that Terrence Ferguson has the same upside as Ananobi. So I don't view them in the same way. Thornwell and Derek White, I don't view them the same way either. I think Thornwell's a guy that you buy a second round pick and you take a flyer and see if he works out. Maybe he's on a two-way contract, something like that. Derek White's a guy I think is a Thunder player from day one. I think Ojale is a Thunder player from day one too. But I just don't think it's that simple. I think that if OG's there, you've got to take him. And then after that, then I would look at a Derek White or an Ojale. What do you think?
I mean, I have the same opinion on this matter. I would add that drafting like a player that has like 2 or 3 year more or less, depending on which side, will not be like decisive in order to keep like a younger core or not. I mean, I get that probably Derek White would be in his prime for his first contract, and maybe Anunoby would be in his prime for his second contract, but that will not make a difference from Russ's point of view. And the idea of building a roster that is on the same timeline with Russ, you do it with free agency. I think OKC will have to get some like veteran player in the offseason, mm-hmm. in either a backup point guard if you don't get him, get it from the draft, or a wing, or even like a big if you trade in a Scanter. But that the 21st pick again is about getting value in any way. So if you can get value because you get an high upside player that you can think you can develop these years, then you do it. If you can get value because you get the perfect fit for this team as of now, you go with it. And so I don't think you have to look at it in from a timeline point of view.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, clearly the Thunder aren't looking at it as a timeline, and I know that that's been kind of a storyline really with this team, and I can just tell you for sure that the Thunder are always trying to be sustainable. Like, they want to have a sustainable team, a team that's going to not bottom out and be the worst team in the NBA, a team that can be good, you know, through the next decade. Like, that's what they want. And so they're always going to try to bring in younger guys and to develop them and keep them. And they're able to do that with Adams and Oladipo. I think that they would like to do that with Abrinas and Sabonis and Jeremy Grant and guys like that, and have a roster kind of built around Russell Westbrook. And some of those guys aren't the best fit, and so I think that they'll change course on some of those guys and bring in guys that'll be a better fit around him. But overall, the Thunder are just trying to have, they're not just gunning for this next season or the season after that. Like, they're gunning to have a team that can grow together. And Kevin Durant screwed all that up. And so they're really having to regroup and figure out how do we form a team out around Russell Westbrook? And they just now have data on that, basically. Like, they have a whole season of data on that. And so I think that we'll kind of see Presti's hand a little bit this summer and in this next year, because I think that there will be some moves made to make this a better fitting roster around Russ. I don't know that Presti thinks in terms of the timeline of Russell Westbrook as much as he does. Like, let's make this team as good as we can for as long as it can be. Next question. Oh, go ahead. Did you have something to say?
No. I mean, I just want to say, I think that maybe a little bit Homer and it will turn out completely wrong next season. But when you look at last season of OKC, don't forget about context. Mm-hmm. Because OKC played in the West and had a very good record, which was, like, yes, influenced by Russ' historical performance in clutch time. But don't forget about the thing that the West is really tougher than the East. And probably if OKC is on the other conference, then he has, like, the record that Toronto or Boston had. Mm-hmm. And so if you tell me that, well, OKC end up second or third in the East with the youngest core that made the playoff, I would say, wow, I'm excited about next season. And I think that OKC should be excited about next season and about this core. And you don't have to drastically change stuff. If you can add someone, then sure, you do it, because you always in search for adding a player that fits in the offseason. But I mean, I would really appreciate what we have and what we had last season.
Yeah. Yeah. I would second that. I think that this team is going to be better. Like, they're going to get better just based on the age, the average age of the player. Like, these guys just typically get better. And Abrines and Sabonis were rookies, and they're going to find somebody that's competent at the backup point guard to play this next year. And that alone is a massive upgrade. It's a massive upgrade. Whether it's Derek White or Shelvin Mack or whoever, like, those are massive upgrades. And that makes this team a lot better. If they can figure out ways to be better with Russ off the court, then you're talking about a 50-plus win team. All right, Britt Potter asks, would you risk Paul George for a post-draft trade of Oladipo, Sabonis, and 21, and see if you can convince them to stay?
Yes, in a heartbeat. Like, I know we just discussed about sustainability and appreciate what we have, but I mean, I think that Paul George is the perfect fit. And if you only have to surrender a piece that is not fitting very well with this team, even if it's young, and I'm talking about Oladipo, you basically, if you think about it, you basically send, like, Ibaka and 21 this year for 1 year rental of Paul George. Mm-hmm. And I think you do it. Because, I mean, of course, if his agent tells you there's no way, I mean, he wants to be in a big market, then don't bother to offer, then of course not. But if he says, well, I may like playing with Russ, and then, I mean, having a core with like Russ, Paul George, Steven Adams, then I think he will give you, like, immediate lift on your quality and your play style and blah blah blah. I think he is worth the risk. I would do it, like, right away.
Yeah, if you could roll out a lineup of Russ, Abrines, Paul George, and let's say you can keep Robertson. I don't know if I probably wouldn't want to start Robertson with him, but you do Jeremy Grant and Adams. I mean, like, you're incredibly athletic. Like, you're versatile scoring-wise, because now you have two guys that can create off the bounce. Paul George is a monster. You're probably the second-best team in the West at that point. And I don't think you necessarily challenge the Warriors, but I think that you could make a Western Conference final. And then you could say, like, we're going to try to add to this core. We're going to, you know, make whatever trade we can. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe Paul George, I don't know. Maybe he still does want to go to the Lakers after that. But I think it would be tempting for him to stay in OKC. But I also, I mean, it's a massive risk. It's if he does say, like, yeah, I'll give it a shot, I'll see how I like it, then I think you're right that you just have to do it. You have to take the chance. But if his agent's like, man, I don't know, like, you can make the trade, but there's a good chance he's going to walk. I think that would be tough, because I think that would set the Thunder back pretty far.
Yeah.
Because they're already set back from where they were. I think that sets you back even further. And then I also think that would be your moment of, okay, now we have to rebuild. Like, now we have to trade Russell Westbrook. We gotta rebuild, because now you're left with, I mean, you don't have Sabonis, the 21st pick, or Oladipo. And then, like, what do you have? You've got Russ and a bunch of guys that are okay. And then you have, like, Adams and Abrines are, like, the next two best players on the team. And that's just, like, that's not great.
Let's put in another perspective. If you sign Paul George in a draft night, does Russ sign, like, the July 1st, his extension or not?
Oh, yeah, he does. Well, okay. In that case, I'm saying that Russ asks for a trade. Like, if, again, like, your superstar small forward walks, I think Russ is like, all right, I don't know what we can do here.
Sure, but you trade, like, 4 years of Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the greatest asset that the humankind has seen in the last, like, 100 year probably. And so, I mean, I get that. I get it is a gamble. But the reason why I'm like saying this all this way, and I sound like very, ruthless, reckless, it's because I don't think that package is enough for Indiana to pull the trigger. And I don't want to offer like Steven Adams in any possible way. Mm-hmm. With Oladipo, I think you can sort of take the risk to lose Oladipo. I'm sad it has to be Sabonis. If it's like Grant and McDermott, maybe it's better. But I would do it. Because like you have Russ for like 5 years at least. Mm-hmm. Having him with that contract, he's still an asset, a huge asset for any big market team. And LA will be in a better position next year, so maybe they want to do Paul George and Russell Westbrook, and you like basically take all their young players and picks and whatever. So yes, you risk to bottom out, but you bottom out with a great, great future anyway.
Yeah, that's true. And you're right. Indy is not sniffing that deal. Like, they're not coming close to that. they're going to Boston. They're saying, hey, you need to give us Jay Crowder, or you need to give us Marcus Smart, and you need to give us two of your first round picks. And the Thunder don't have that kind of value to give. Like, they don't have it outside of Russell Westbrook. They don't have that kind of value to give for Paul George. So I don't think they're in the conversation at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. On the other hand, Boston will not do that because it's too much to risk. But if LA sends like one of their future picks and like Julius Randle type of guy, mm-hmm. Then I think like the agent will be vocal in that sense. Say, well, my associate would want to go there, and they will probably let him go there because the package is as nice. And so it's a long shot, but if the Thunder can pull it off, I would do it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Last question. Fergie Fresh 24 asks, of the bench squad, who would make you most disappointed to see traded? And can it can be based on personality, upside, etc.
I mean, it always depends on the trade, but I don't want to Alex Abinus to be traded, and neither I want Domantas Sabonis to be traded. But I mean, I think that these, well, Sabonis was a starter, so technically I'm not sure it counts. But yeah, I mean, I think you have to give both players at least another year, unless something exceptional comes into your way, like Blake Griffin or Paul George or whatever trade they can possibly imagine. Otherwise, I would really keep them both because they are upside. They are serious guys. Tons of upside there on the defensive end for Domas and like on both ends of the floor for Alex. And so I would really keep them unless, again, something exceptional comes into place.
Yeah, I think Abrines would be my guy. Like, I just think that he fits this modern NBA so well. He's got just a winner's mentality. He loves to play. He's not afraid of the moment. He's not afraid of anything. And he can really shoot the basketball. And I think that he's going to fit next to Russ very, very, very well moving forward. So I would hate to see him go. Sabonis, too. I'm still a big believer in him as a guy that can come in at the four and shoot and pass and rebound well. But I think Abrines probably over him at this point, just because he's already a good NBA player, and I think that he's only going to get better. So I'd be really disappointed to see him go. Michele, thanks for coming on the podcast today. We can follow you on Twitter at Mikey Barra. We can follow your stuff at Chartside. If you've read, I wrote a piece along with Michele for Daily Thunder. He and his guys have really helped out a lot. They did probably 90% of the work. I did about 10% of the work. So it's really good stuff. If you want information on a lot of these guys that we talk about, there's a ton of stats in there. I talk about the fit that they are with the Thunder. It's a really cool collaboration that's going to be up on Daily Thunder. You can look for, I'm just finishing up the piece about who they should take at 21. So you're going to see a lot of the guys that we talked about today in that. And then we'll talk about second rounders that'll go up before the draft. So check those out, dailythunder.com, and check out Chartside as well, where you'll see a lot of Michele's work. Anything else you'd like to share before we're done?
No, I think you said that basically everything. Yeah, maybe check our account, Twitter account, Chartside, for like, we will probably put short chart then at draft night or close to draft night about all the top players or when they come out. So you can look into that and so like our charts and maybe some other stats that we will show during draft night.
Yeah, they've got great charts. And if you didn't know, their charts are on the Ringer's website. So I think it's, what is it? NBA draft.theringer or something like that.
Yeah, basically we did we gave them numbers. All the graphic stuff are theirs, so they use their own graphical team to pull that off. But we did basically all the tagging and like give them the numbers and to complete their project. It is again nbadraft.theringer.com.
Mm-hmm. And they did a really bad thing in not using your charts because, but I'm not disappointed because I get to use your charts now on Daily Thunder. Like, you check those out. They're really, really good looking charts, and they really say a whole lot more than the shot charts that are on the Ringer. So go check those out. They're great. They're great. Thanks for listening to our show.
Not our call.
Yeah, not your call. thanks for listening. Come to our draft party Thursday night. It's going to be so fun. Hang out with us. Free Chicken Express. Chance to win some big time prizes. Come hang out with us then. And we will talk to you guys on Wednesday.